Okay, let's start with the third session focusing on Office 365 Pro Plus. Thanks for attending my session. I know it's always a hard time for Mark Rosinovich to have the same time slot than I have. So we will dive into Office 365 Pro Plus, into how it gets deployed or what happens under the hood when it's deployed, how we enabled it to run side by side with older version of Office, MSI installations, and also how you can enable logging, how you troubleshoot problems, how the activation is going on, what are common issues during activation. So yesterday we covered the actual deployment, so how you implement it into your infrastructure to deploy it using SCCM, MDT, Intune, whatever. And at noon we focused on the whole management of Office click-through on updates, and this we are level 200 sessions. This is a level 300 session, so we are going into the registry, we are going into the file system to get a more in-depth view how the whole click-to-run technology is really working on the machine. So this is basically what we will cover in this last time slot at TechEd. So I'm between you and your weekend. So I really try to go through it on time. Talking about click-to-run, who has played around with Office 365 Pro Plus already and has some experience with click-to-run technology? Okay, me, and of course you, yeah. Before we go into the Office 365 Pro Plus, I'm Martin Notnager from MCS Germany. I'm working with customers deploying MSI-based Office and also click-to-run-based Office since we started the first technology adoption program, which is really a pre-beta program. I was working with the click-to-run technology and worked with it during how it developed a lot during the last 12 months. And we will also go into some details what we have updated during the last month from an IT pro perspective to have more control, more insight into the product. So if I will cover what's click-to-run shortly if you had not played around with it in the past. With Office 2000 or 2002, we introduced the MSI technology, Microsoft Installer technology, to get all the different Office applications onto a machine. They were really individual applications, and they were all tied together by the MSI technology. In an Office 2007, 2010, 2013 source file folder, you can see the structure. All applications are separated. You see a bunch of MSI files. And when you kick off an MSI installation, it really, under the hood, these are a lot of chained installations of Office application. Each application is installed one after another using the MSI technology. It's updated with MSP files, so also based on MSI. With Office 365 Pro Plus, we changed the whole underlying technology, how we deploy Office onto a client, because a typical MSI installation takes about 15 to 20 minutes on modern hardware. And if you integrate a service pack into this sources, it adds about 10 minutes. So you're by an about 30-minute installation for Office 2010 or 2013 based on MSI. And this really takes a lot of time, and the user is not able to use his or her machine during this time. It's blocked by the installation. With click-to-run, we transferred a lot of the virtualization technology we developed in the MV area into the Office area to package the whole Office stuff in a different way to have one large installation process running and deploying and streaming Office onto the client. And also what we got from the MV technology over to the Office technology to click to run is that you can launch Office before it's fully installed. So before it's fully locally cached, you already can kick off an Office application and start working. So for a user, the typical downtime during installation is about 2 minutes, 3 minutes. Then the user can start to use Office while it's still installing in the background. So the whole underlying technology of Click2Run is different to MSI, but the product inside the Click2Run package is basically the same. It's a full-featured Office application with the same functionality, the same APIs, the same object model than an Office 2013 MSI. So the applications are the same, but the technology we use to deploy it, to update it, is very different to MSI, and they have nearly nothing in common. So what have you ever seen a Click2Run installation kicking off? Who has seen an Office Click2Run installation kicking off? Okay, about half. Okay, I will kick off an installation in a minute. What is really happening? A Click2Run installation for installing in a managed environment, you need the source files, which can be provided from the Office Cloud Delivery Network or Content Delivery Network, the Office CDN, often shortened the Office Cloud. And you need a bootstrapper to kick off the installation. And this is the Office Deployment Toolkit, which is a free download. And you can package it up in your software distribution solution or distribute it through login scripts or group policy, whatever, to kick off the installation on the client. And then during installation, the setup.exe, the ODT, streams down the source files from the Office Cloud, or you point the installation to a location in your own environment, in your backend, in your data center, or on the client. So the setup.exe and the source files are decoupled and can reside at different locations during installation. When you kick off an installation with Click2Run, the setup.exe is really a small file, about 900K in size. It reaches out to the source location and grabs the whole installation engine, which is packaged within the whole Click2Run package. So if you kick off the setup.exe, it just checks for some basic requirements, like is it at least a Windows 7 I'm running on? Is there enough space on disk? And then it extracts the client, Click2Run client, from the source files, downloads it to the client, install it, and kicks it off. It starts it. It's an Office Click2Run.exe, which then executes within the user context. That must be a context with administrative rights because we are installing a piece of software. But it kicks off within this user context, checks a lot more of requirements, and then it installs a service into the client. The Click2Run service, which is responsible for managing the whole Click2Run installation and also updating Office at a later point in time. And after this service is installed and kicked off, the installation process really splits up into two experiences. The one is it launches the first run experience to let the user know the installation is done, you can start using your Office application. So it's really only downloading a few files for the setup engine, installs the service, and then it advertises itself to the user, I'm done, you can start using your Office application. Unless you suppressed it in the XML file, which you have to use to configure your installation. You can suppress it there. But in default, it will then run the first run experience. And the second half is taken over by the installed service, so it's running in a system account context. And this starts to stream down the whole Office application, and it's also watching for the user starting a certain Office application. So if the user is starting, for example, PowerPoint, and PowerPoint is not yet downloaded onto the client and cached and installed, it will download the bits and bytes needed to launch PowerPoint. And then if the user is using certain features within the application, it will always download the feature blocks which are needed to provide the functionality to the user. And if the user stops using the application, it continues to stream down the whole package. And this takes, on a regular client hardware with a good internet connection, about 8 to 10 minutes until the whole Office source files are on the client, decompressed, and copied over into the file system. And as you can see here, it's streaming and integration, so it's streaming down the Office applications, and it's also kicking off processes to integrate into the operating system. So for example, taking over the file associations to integrate itself into the start menu, to when you're using OneNote, if you do not exclude OneNote from deployment, it installs a OneNote printer, so you can print into a virtual printer, and it's put into a OneNote notebook. These are all the integration steps happening in the background in parallel with streaming down the client. And if this is all done and finished, then the installation is finished, and it gives back an error level, hopefully of zero, so everything is fine and the installation is done. So streaming happens only once it's all cached locally and extracted and integrated, and the whole Office application is ready to go, ready to use. And the same process kicks off when we update Office at a later point in time. Also, the service running in a system context streams down the files needed for updating the installed Office, prepares all the files, prepares all the integration steps, and then copies it over the existing installation. We will see this later on a demo machine. So this is really the flow of installation. I will kick off an installation so we can follow the flow. So I'm kicking off now the installation with a XML file. Let's have a quick look into the XML file. The XML file is pointing to a UNC path within my own data center. So it's pointing to a file server providing the bits and bytes. So I'm not streaming down from the Office cloud. Most customers want to have the source files on-prem, so you can also use the ODT to download the source files on-prem, distribute it in your backend across your distribution points or on web-based locations. So you can also specify HTTP and HTTPS locations, and then they install the clients from there. When I now kick off the setup.exe, you might see that there was a short delay at 50%. This is when it switches over from the user mode into the system context. And now the system, the service is already installed and starts to stream down Office in the backend. So the first few steps really happens within a few seconds. So I kicked off the setup.exe. It reached out to the network location, downloaded the click-to-run.exe files, extracted it, initiated it, and created the service. The service now downloads the whole Office source files onto the client, decompresses them, and puts them into the appropriate folders. Go back to the machine. So Office is installing in the background. Let's see if the integration already happened. No, not yet. I'm not seeing an Office application in the start menu. So it's still streaming the core of Office down to the client, and then it kicks off the integration into the start menu. Let's have a look into the source files. This is the location I specified. let's do it this way. You can see the file size also. These are the source files downloaded using the ODT file, ODT tool. And let's go from the bottom to the top. The stream.dat file with xnun in its name are basically the core files of Office. So this is without a language. This is basic binary files you need to run Office. The file above is the English language packs. So if you're providing more language packs, for example, German and or Russian, you see more stream files like this. And language packs are about 150 to 200 megs in size. And the core files is about 900 meg. And then you see these two files, E32 and E64. So it's a 32-bit component to run the installation, and it's a 64-bit component to run the installation based on the bitness of your operating system, not based on the bitness of your Office installation, and some helper files also. We can look into these files because they are plain cap files. And you can see here, they mentioned Office click-to-run.exe file, which is really doing the heavy lifting of kicking off the real installation. And as I said, we brought over a bunch of mechanisms from the AppV world. So you can see here files showing that the underlying technology to get the Office with a click-to-run way onto the client is based on AppV. So it is really downloading this file, extracting it, installing it. It creates a service. And then there's basically some kind of application virtualization running, streaming down the stream files. So let's have a look into my start menu. There we can see that Office 2013 is already installed. And when I launch PowerPoint, it's already cached because it said starring. Let's see if we can find an application which is not cached yet. Let's go for publisher. It's already cached. It's too fast. All applications are already cached. Let's try Word. Now it's already starting up. It's already cached. Else on the splash screen in the bottom, it would say streaming features. Then it will stop the current stream, stream the application that the user kicked off, and the moment the application has opened, it continues to stream the other Office applications. So the installation is not done yet, but as a user, I'm able to use Office already. Let's have a look at the task manager, what's going on. In the task manager view, we can see the Office click-to-run.exe, which is running in the user's context. So I'm logged in with the user admin Berlin, and the Office click-to-run is running in this context. It installed the service from this context and then started the service. And this is the second Office click-to-run.exe, which is running in a system context. So this is basically really this. Whoa, service. It's some kind of art. And you can see here MSIXE running. So click to run is at certain points kicking off MSI-based installation to install the integration into the operating system. So we are using the click to run service and based on AppV to install the Office application, but for the integration points into the operating system, so for example, installing the fonts, installing shortcuts, taking all the file associations, installing the drivers for the virtual OneNote printer, we kick off MSI installation to get these integration points. because we cannot virtualize the integration points because they are owned by the operating system. So we must install into the operating system, and if no, it's not possible to virtualize the printer, or it's not possible to virtualize the shortcut integration. It must be installed into the operating system, and then it's owned by the operating system. Let's delete my art here. Let's go back to the slides. So this is really the installation flow which happened. I kicked off the setup.exe, the small bootstrapper, downloaded the cap files, extracted them, installed them, kicked off the service installation, and then it started to stream down the data. And it really happened within 1 or 1.5 minutes. As you have seen, I can, after 2 minutes or 3 minutes, I can start using my Office applications in a normal way. But the installation from a technical perspective is not done yet. That's ongoing, and will be finished in a few minutes. So let's look into the folder and registry structure, which is built. The folder and registry structure really gives us an impression why we can run a click-to-run based Office, or Office 365 Pro Plus, and an older version of Office on the same machine. Because using the application virtualization technology underlying, the click-to-run Office is installed to different locations than older versions of Office, and you have no conflicts of having them running side by side. And also, the click-to-run version of Office uses a kind of a virtual registry, so that we do not have conflicts with an already installed version of Office. The idea behind improving the side-by-side experience with Office click-to-run is not that you want to have two versions of Office running in your environment, but to make it easier to switch from one version of Office to the next version. So it's not a hard cut over, but for a testing group or pilot group, you can install both Office applications on the clients, stream the new applications side by side onto the machine with all the installation of Office, and the user can, for a certain amount of time, use both applications, the newer ones, and if they have any issues, they can fall back into the older applications, and you should remove the older Office application after a few weeks or months of running both applications side by side. But running two versions of the MSI-based Office installation side by side was really kind of a nightmare. Let's look onto the machine. The installation finished, by the way. The installation is finished, so it took about 7 minutes, maybe, to install the whole Office application onto the machine. I did not exclude any applications, so you have really the equivalent of Office 2013 Professional Plus installed on the machine, but in a much shorter time frame. An MSI installation for the same patch level, which is September, would have taken at least 30 minutes. Let's have a look into the file system. The Office Click to Run is living in a program files folder on a 64-bit system. It's a 32-bit Office, but because it's hosted by a 64 virtualization platform, it's really living within the program files and not in the program file x86 folder. So it's C, program files, Microsoft Office 15, and in the client x64 folder, you can find the underlying technology of click-to-run. So you can see files named AppV catalog, AppV file system. This is really the magic which makes it possible to run two versions of Office side by side, and also the files needed for the services, the integrated office.exe, the Office click-to-run client, and the Office click-to-run.exe. The data folder is used by the click-to-run technology to stage certain informations or files needed. It will get used during updates, for example. I will kick off an update in a minute so we can see what happens when we update click-to-run from one version to the next version. This is really happening in the data folder. And when we go into the root folder, you can see a lot of folders you might know from older Office versions. So they are the Clipart folder, the Document Theme folder, and also the Office 15 folder. And there are all binary files decompressed. So this is where the WinWord.exe is living, so Word is living, MS Access is living. So even if we are using virtualization technologies to install Office much quicker than we had in the past or were able in the past, it's a locally fully installed Office with all binary files on a file as individual files. It's not a container file or something. So this is where Office is really installed to. And we have another set of folders. This is RSOD, stands for Registry Staging on Demand. So within these folders, you have basically a set of registry keys which Office uses when it's running. So this is why it's on demand. When you launch an Office application, these reg keys are mirrored into the registry and can be used by the Office applications, but they are not all the time present in the registry, so there are no conflicts with all the installations of Office. And the same is for this folder VFS, which stands for Virtual File System. All files that Office needs outside its own install location, so for example in the Windows folder or in the program data folder, are really located in this virtual file system folder, so we have no conflicts with an already installed Office. If we are trying to inject or install files into a Windows folder, we had to override files from older Office installations. So for enabling a side-by-side scenario, all these integration points with the operating system outside their own install folder are located there. And when an Office application is running, the Office application is redirected into this virtual file system if the application wants to read a file from the Windows folder or from a program data folder. So if we look into the Windows folder, we, for example, can see that it will virtualize some installer entries, INF entries, or if you look into program files, x86, it will also virtualize some files within the own Office folder or even a Microsoft SQL folder. I have no idea what's doing with the SQL. So these technologies are really employed to enable side-by-side scenarios, so that you have clients running Windows 7 with Office 2007 or 2010, and you can install the click-to-run version side-by-side, not having a hard switch over from one version to the next, but more of a smooth transition from one version to the next version. And this is all powered by an application virtualization technology. Let's switch to the update demo machine. This one. Let's take a quick note of the amount of network traffic that occurred on this machine. It's about 250 kilobytes. And I will now initiate an update from the command line. So the client now reaches out to an update location, which I can host on-prem, so I can provide updates within my own environment, or I can redirect the clients into the Office Cloud, and then they will start to download the updates from there. So it's already downloading the Office updates. This is really different than based on MSI technology. MSI technology used MSP files. So when we patched Office, we had to have a bunch of MSP files, and they were installed one after the other. And each install was a full MSI install with all the transaction logging and going in one sequence from decompressing files, copying files, closing the installation, and then starting the next update run. With the clicked run technology, we're also using the streaming technology to enable faster updates. Let's have a look into the file system, what happens here. Let's go into program files, Microsoft Office 15 data, and then into the updates folder. And it already downloaded all my data. And that's needed for the update. It will download it into the data updates download folder. Once the download is finished, it will move all files into the apply folder. I go into the package files and into root. I again see the structure of an Office installation. And within the Office 15 folder, I can see all the files which will be replaced during update. Let's have a look on the file size of this update. The update is about 600 meg on disk, but across the network, we only transmitted 130 megs. That's because the streaming is, on the one hand, it's compressed, and on the other hand, we're using a binary differencing calculation, so the Office client checks against the update location what have changed and only downloads the changes on a sub-file level. So it does not download the whole Office client again, it does not download the whole files again, it just downloads the differences between the current installation and the target version, which should be copied on or installed on the client. And then it uses the files already on the disk and patches them to the new version. And this all is pre-staged. And this updates apply package files root folder. And we are looking into here into the Office 15 folder. So this is why it expands to about 600 meg of files which must be replaced. And this all happens in the background when you're using the automatic update mechanism or you kick it off by your client management system with the command line switches to do it silent. This will all happen in the background. And then when we update Office, let's have a look at my Word document with some text. It's an unsafe document, so it says document one in the headline. And I have not used the command line to force an application shutdown. Now we apply the update, and what is really happening, it moves the files from the folder, the root folder, as you can see the folder is now empty, into the installation directory of Office. So it moves 600 megs of files, and then the updating is done. So this is a different approach compared to the MSI technology where we patched the files which are already on disk. In this case, we're preparing a new set of files and then just copy them over the existing files, overwriting the existing files. And my Word opened up again, and thanks to the autosave feature, I did not lose my very important document I've noted here. And so we updated to the next version. This is the October build we updated to, incurring 130 megs on the network traffic. let's compare to the MSI build. The same amount or the same can be achieved when you're on the MSI side, going from September to October patch level. You have to have 870 megs of MSP files streamed or moved down to the client, then decompressed, then installed one MSP file after the another. So applying the MSP files would take about 5 to 10 minutes. Applying the click-to-run update took only 2 minutes, 3 minutes. So it's a much faster technology because it really treats the whole installation as one set of files which are copied from one location to the next location to update. And not like MSP, which is really patching individual applications one after the another. Let's go back to the slides. So I've shown you the folder and registry structure of an installed click-to-run client. And we have also seen why we enabled the side-by-side mode with click-to-run. And now switch over to the scheduled tasks. Let's go to the same machine again. So it not only installs a set of files and registry keys, it also installs three or four scheduled tasks. One task is for automatic updates. So by default, if you're not specifying during installation an XML file, anything else, the automatic updates is enabled and point it to the cloud, and the client will try to update itself every 24 hours. So every 24 hours, it tries to check if a newer version is accessible on the Office Content Delivery Network. You can, during installation, disable automatic updates or point automatic updates to a different location, maybe a network share within your own environment or an HTTP-based update source you have provided within your own backend. And you also can control this through group policy preferences and group policy settings. So you have different ways to take full control. But with the default installation, this task will trigger each day and try to discover new updates, download them, decompress them, prepare them, and then install them over the client. We can see the triggers. It will do it weekly on, and after the user logged on, there's a delay. So the user logs on and then it waits for 15 minutes before it starts to try to update Office. And then the same as I have done from the command line is we kick off the Office click-to-run client.exe with an update command switch. There's a second scheduled task because the Office 365 Pro Plus is not a perpetual license, it's a subscription-based license. We have also a scheduled task running at least once per day, checking for the licensing status. So if the user has still an Office license assigned, so it has to connect to the internet, to the Office licensing service hosted in the Microsoft data centers, and checks if they are still in subscription assigned to the user. And if a subscription is assigned to the user or a license is assigned to the user, it activates Office for 30 days, but it will continue to try every day it tries to reactivate for another 30 days. So the client must be online at least once per month, and then it can be offline for 29 days. But it will try each day to get a new licensing activation token, which is valid for 30 days. This is the Office subscription maintenance task. Sometimes it's called the Office Licensing Heartbeat because this is the underlying .exe file. It's really the heartbeat. Our Office is checking if it has still a valid license. And then there are two other scheduled tasks. If you're employing Office telemetry, which must be configured through group policy settings, so you have to enable Office telemetry. It's not enabled by default, but you can enable it through group policy. It will collect information about how Office is running, how long it took to open the application, how long it took to load the add-ins, if there are any crashes, if a functionality is not working, if a document uses, for example, ActiveX controls, which are no longer supported by Office in the current version. This is all collected. It's built into the application, this telemetry, and then uploaded to a central location, and there it can be processed into a dashboard to see if Office is running well in your environment, or if you see a lot of crashes, or if Office slows down, maybe after you deployed a new version of an add-in. With Office telemetry, you can proactively monitor if your Office clients are behaving well, running well, or if you're seeing any issues. And these two tasks are responsible for uploading these data onto the central file share specified by group policy, so it can be integrated into the database and then monitored by, for example, the IT department. So these are the scheduled tasks. The first one, telemetry, the implementation is done in two tasks, but they both serve the same purpose. And they're running in the user context, so they're using the user account to upload the data, and the two other tasks are running in a system account. So for the subscription maintenance and automatic updates, the user must not be logged on. They will still run and try to validate the license and also check if a newer build of Office is present on the Office content delivery network or at your location you specified. So when deploying Office 365 Pro Plus in a customer's environment, we encounter a number of different issues, but we often see the same three issues, especially when the IT staff is starting to play around with click to run. There are some gotchas you have to know about to be successful in deploying Office click to run. What we have often seen in the past are permission issues. Because the streaming is done by a service, the service itself presents, or the service is running in the context of a system account. So in the past, when installing Office, the system itself had to connect to the network share or connect to the Office cloud to download the Office installation. So in the past, we have often seen issues where the installation is not working. It starts, then it downloads the bootstrapper, it installs the service, and then it fails because the system account is not allowed to reach the location where the source files are provided from. We fixed it in July that the installer can revert back or fall back into the user context. So if the system account is not allowed to access your network share, it will fall back into the user context and stream the files in user context. But if you're testing around with the update mechanisms and you have different builds and you haven't built all in July just to test the update and downgrade scenario, after you successfully downgrade it, maybe you're not able to upgrade again because your network location is not accessible from a system account. So it should not be an issue when running with a July build or newer build, but sometimes you see, or even if we do our own testing and you're really going from very old to from new build to a very old build, you're hitting this permission issue. A second issue is any issues with the installation source. When files are missing or files are corrupt, in most customer scenarios, we implemented a way to download the source files from a cloud onto an on-prem location, and then we distribute the source files from this on-prem location across all data centers or all campuses the enterprise have. And during these files get copied over the wire, if an Office client tries to update itself, it can already see the files which are still being copied around, and when it tries to access the files, it will get an error because the files are not completely copied, and so they are invalid, the signatures are invalid, and it's not working. Or if you're playing around with the with different builds to test the update and downgrade scenarios, sometimes the cap files does not match the actual build. And this, for this, we will do a quick demo. Let's go into, that's why the folder is called broken. So we kick off the installation and it says could not install. Let's have a look what we are trying to achieve. I'm pointing the installation to a network location. Let's have a look at the network location. When you're pointing the client to a network location for install or a network location for updates, you always have to point it to the root of a folder structure which is created by ODT. If you download the source files and you specify download to C Office, it will automatically create two folders, one called Office, one called Data, and within this folder, all the source files are cached and downloaded and cached. So you have not to point them deep into the structure, do not have to point the installation into the build folder, but always at the root. So that looks fine. I have an V32 cap, which is required by the installation. I look into my build folder, and it also looks fine. I can see the AppV agent. I can see the support files. I can see the stream files for the English language pack and the core files. So everything looks fine. To get more information what's going wrong here, the install is always creating logs. And we have two locations where the logs are located. As I've shown, the installation process starts in the user context, so it writes its own log file into the temp folder of the user, in this case, the trusty admin. And there's a log file always named with the computer name and a timestamp. And there I can see what is really going on. And when looking at the log files of a click-to-run installation, always check this column. As long as it's stating medium, everything is fine. But we can see an unexpected here. And then you should look above and below the unexpected, what's really going on. Let's start just above the unexpected files. It set an installation path, which is fine. It looked for an existing client. It did not find an existing client. This is okay, it's a new machine with a new install of Office. And then it tries to download the integration file, the AppV client. And then we have the file download error, download failed. So it cannot access this folder and file. Let's have a look into my network share. And as you can see, the build numbers are not matching. So the setup tries to install a different build then I provided an installation source. And this can happen if you're playing around with update and downgrade scenarios and copying the source files back and forth, because in the root folder, there's a v32 cap file. And this cap file basically contains the information what is the current build in this folder. And if you're only copying around the folder itself without the associated cap file, there will be a mismatch. So let's look into the v32 cap file. There's a version descriptor in it. And let's look into the version descriptor. And it's an old v32 cap file, which is pointing to an older build that I provided here. This can happen if you download the source files by specifying a certain build, then copying them around without also overwriting the existing v32 cap file. When you download the source files, and the ODT will always create a backup or a cap file for backup purposes. So you can, after downloading the build, there's always a re32_buildnummer.cap file. So you have to delete the re32 cap file, rename the right one, and then the installation will continue because the v32 cap file and the source files are now matching again. But what I also wanted to show is how to read the log file. So it's really a straightforward look for the unexpected lines and then check the lines above unexpected and below unexpected. And then you have a good idea what's happening during installation, why it's failing. So if you have invalid files, corrupt files, it will also be noted in this log. And as I said, the installation is happening in two steps, kicking off in the user context and then continuing in the system context. If the log file in a temp folder looks good, you have to go to C Windows temp, which is the temp folder of this system account. And then you can also check there for a log file if you have any information about what happened. But we were now still failing in the user context. The switch to system context was not yet happening, so we have only a 1K file, which basically said I have nothing to do. And the third issue we often encounter are proxy issues, because Office 365 Pro Plus is a subscription licensed piece of software. It has to have to connect to the internet for the initial activation and then at least once per 30 day to reactivate or for another 30 days. So we provided or published a list of URLs our Office client is talking to, and these URLs must be accessible for the Office client. If the clients are not directly connected to the internet, which is true for the most managed environments, the proxy must provide transparent access to these files. So if you're running the proxy in a mode where the user always have to type in username and password to access the internet, the Office client is not able to access the internet because it cannot type in a username and a password into this dialog box. So the proxy must support a transparent connection. Or you have to whitelist the URLs so the Office client can access the URLs without signing into the proxy itself. In the past, we used only the system account to access the URLs, So the proxy saw the machine accessing the internet and not the user. About 2 or 3 months ago, we fixed that. So if you're running a current build, the ClickTrojan will first try to access the internet with a system account, so the machine account goes to the proxy and tries to connect to the internet. If this fails, it will take it will go into the user level and use the settings and credentials of the user to connect to the internet. So if your proxy is not open for machine accounts but transparent on a user level, then it should work. But if you have not a transparent proxy or you're requiring username and password every time, you will have an issue here that Office can be installed, but it cannot be activated afterwards. And later in the slide deck, there's also a link to a TechNet article describing all URLs and IP addresses which must be accessible for the client. And we also provide an RSS feed you can subscribe to. If we change the URLs or IP addresses, Office 365 Pro Plus must be able to talk to, and you will get notified. So you do not have to visit TechNet every day. So I have shown something about the logging already, but let's cover two more aspects. So I already shown the logging happening during installation, which is basic logging. When you're using a setup.exe with an XML file, you can disable log. By default, the logging is on, writing a log file to the temp folder of the current user profile and into the system account, but you can disable it so no logs are written. If you need more logging, you can enable more logging in the registry by setting a WAC key, and then you really have kind of a verbose logging, so it's really extensive logging. In most cases, for an IT pro, this is not needed. In most cases, the default logs are detailed enough to inform you what is going wrong. And these logs are created during install and also during updating. So every time the ClickTrojan engine is modifying the client in any way, install, update, downgrade, it generates these logs detailing what happened on a machine. You can also create an application launch log. So during the first application launch, it will try to activate Office. So if you have issues activating Office, you can enable this logging to see what's happening during the first launch of the application. And they are also located in a temp folder, and then you will find there a file named, for example, winword.exe.log. And there it will write down a lot of information about how the Office process, for example, is loading, but also then how the initial activation is going or not going. And there's also a visual basic script file, a VBS file, called OSPP, so the Office Software Protection Platform VBS, which you can use from a command line to see what's going on with the activation. The OSPP VBS is also present in Office 2013 and also present in Office 2010. So also in this version of Office, you can use OSPP to see if it's on the volume license side, it's a Mac activation, or if it's a KMS activation, if the activation is still valid. And in the Office 365 Pro Plus version of Office, you can see if the subscription is active, when the subscription will expire, if you're using a shared computer activation, if the shared user activation is enabled, and so on. So let's have a look to the OSPP VBS. Let's go into program files, Microsoft Office, wrong one. Office 15 folder, which is really a small folder because the majority of files is stuffed into the program files, Microsoft Office, root folder. But for compatibility reasons, we put some files at this location. And you can see the OSPP HTM file, which I will launch now. Which gives you an overview of all the command line switches you can use with OSPP VBS. That's the OSPP VBS can be used to assess the current status of the Office client, but it can also be used to automate, for example, just when you want for a volume license client to switch from KMS activation to MAC activation or replace a product key. So it's really a powerful command line tool to manage all the activation licensing stuff of Office 2010, 2013, and 365 Pro Plus. So in our case, I just want to see the current status of my subscription. So because it's in VBS script, I have to type in C script, OSPP VBS display status. And now it informs me that there's a time-based subscription channel SKU of Office installed, which is the more or less technical name for the Office 365 Pro Plus subscription-based license. So it's time-based because it's timing out if it's not able to reactivate within 30 days. It's running within the time-based validity period, so everything is fine. I can see, for technical reason, the product key. From a technical standpoint, there's still a product key in the product. Also, you do not have to enter one. And it has a remaining grace of 62 days. This is because it's a special build of Office, which runs a bit longer. But if your Office cannot activate, you will see then grace, which starts with Office 365 Pro Plus, by 5 days. So then you will see a grace period of 5 days counting down if the activation is not possible. After 5 days, the users will get nagged by Office could not be activated. I will deactivate a lot of functionality. Then the Office is basically a reader program. Please contact your system admin. Talking about activation, activation is really kind of a three-step process. After installing Office, Office is not activated. You do not have to enter a product key. You do not have to enter credentials to download the source files or to install the whole Office build. This is all without any activation or licensing attached. So from an IT Pro perspective, it's a free download and can start to play around with it too. Test my deployment, to test my updates, but I'm not able to use Office for longer than 5 days because then the Office application will go to the reduced functionality mode. So the activation happens after the installation. On first launch of the Office application, it will spin up the OSPP service, and this service will then check if the transparent activation was enabled, so if you're employing Active Directory Federation services. So the domain account of the user can be used to sign in into the Office 365 portal and get a license. Or if ADFS is not enabled and the group policy is not set to have a transparent activation, there will be a screen popping up asking the user for his login name, which is basically the email address, and the password for the Office 365 portal. If you're using DealSync, it's the same password than the user is using for the domain account. But if you're not employing DealSync, these are two different passwords. So this is the first step that the user can sign in. The Office client is validating if it's a valid sign-in, so correct username and the correct password. Then the OLS, the Office Licensing Service, tries to get a key or generate a key. With Office 365 Pro Plus, you can activate Office on 5 machines. So it will check if the user has still a machine open which can be blocked by this installation. And if it's the first, second, third, fourth, fifth machine the user is logging into an unactivated Office, it will grab one of these licenses, generate a key, and send it down to the client. And then the client really gets activated with a token which is valid for 30 days. And then Office is activated and can be used for 30 days. And as we have seen, the heartbeat process would try to get a new token, which is again valid for 30 days each day. So if the heartbeat can connect every 5 days to the internet and get a new token, the user will never see again an activation prompt. So these are really the Pro Plus activation activities. The initial registration or activation, which happens only one time when the first user logs onto a machine with an unactivated Office on it. So it's a one-time thing going on, and it will send up to the Office service the user ID, the product key of the Office installation, which is automatically generated, the computer name, because in a portal, the user can see on which machines he have activated Office. That's why we're sending up the computer name, so the user can later identify on which machines have I activated the Office and can deactivate the installation if he wants to free up one slot for using a newer machine. And also a machine ID to uniquely identify the machine. So if the machine is renamed, the activation is still valid because the activation is tied to the machine ID. Then we have these subscription check. This is really the heartbeat happening every day. Checking if the subscription is still active. If an administrator removed the license from a user and the heartbeat will check it, will automatically then deactivate the Office if the license was already removed. And because the activation is valid for 30 days, this process must succeed at least once per 30 days, and this is what's connected to the Office licensing service running in the cloud. It's kind of on-prem, you're activating against the KMS, and a subscription-based model, you're activating against the OLS. And then there's a product key management. So valid subscription generates a new security token or activation token, and this will be used to activate or reactivate Office. This will all happen in an ADFS environment, completely transparent to the user, so user never sees a login box, and it just happens. If you're running a dual sync configuration, the user only have to type in its username and password during the initial registration and then never again. So the reactivation happens then again transparent for the user. If you're not employing dual sync or ADFS, the user have to type in his initial information for initial registration and activation. And then if the user changes the password in the Office 365 portal, he has to re-enter the information into the Office client. So for all customers having more than, let's say, 20 machines, it's a proven practice to at least implement dual sync to get the user not having managing two accounts, the domain account and Office 365 account. For larger environments, we always recommend to use an ADFS to manage all the user profiles, user accounts and passwords completely transparent. So the user does not have to fiddle around with them, and this will only generate help desk calls. As I said, the activation is done against the Office Activation Service, which is running in the Microsoft Cloud. I put the link on the bottom of the slide to the Office 365 setup architecture, which is a list of all URLs, ports, and IP addresses needed for the different Office 365 services. So in the Office 365 Pro Plus section, you see the IP addresses and or URLs you need to enable Pro Plus to activate. And on this page also you can see all the protocols and URLs and IPs needed for other Office 365 workloads like Exchange, like Loom, SharePoint, or whatnot. So let's cover some activation scenarios. Because it's tied to the machine ID, which is really the SM BIOS unique identifier, it's tied to the machine. So if you reinstall the machine with a new operating system or the same operating system, and you reinstall Office on it, and the Office gets reactivated or activated for the first time, the new install for the first time, it will not grab a second license from the Office 365 portal. It will recognize it's the same piece of hardware, and it's still blocking only one slot of your five slots for Office 365 Pro Plus installation. So the same as for rebuilding and upgrading my Office, or switching from Windows 7 to Windows 8. We are not taking another license. We are reactivating the already existing license. Because it's decoupled from the computer name, you can also rename the computer. So for example, in lab environments, when you, computers are renamed and re-imaged on a regular basis to test something, you will not eating through your five activations quickly, only if you're using more than five machines with the same user account. Same is true for network card or hard disk. This is different with the Windows activation in the past, but Office is not using information about your network card or your hard disk. If you're using virtual machines, so for example, also in a testing environment, you're running not a physical testing environment, but a virtual one, running on Hyper-V, ESX, or whatnot, then rebuilding the VM will generate a new SM BIOS unique identifier. And so if you sign into the machine, it will grab a new license from the portal. So after reinstalling the machine five times and logging in with the same user account five times, you will have blocked all your five activations for Office. And you have to log into the Office 365 portal and remove all the activations. So it's a bit different in a VM scenario. The same is true if you're moving virtual machines from one host to another host. They also get a new unique identifiers. And so the Office 365 portal will recognize it as a new device, register it as a new device. So we have about 2 minutes left, 3 minutes left. So we really got down into the underpinnings of Office 365 Pro Plus, how the installation is working, how the side-by-side scenarios are enabled, how the activation is working, how you can enable logging. I showed you one example, how to read the log and find the source or the root cause of any problems. So if you have any questions about Office 365 Pro Plus, please raise your hand. The question was if we can use a KMS server to activate Office 365 Pro Plus. This is not possible. With a subscription based license, it has to connect to the Office cloud running to, in the internet. So it's not possible to activate against KMS. There's no multiple activation key, no MAC key, and also the Active Directory-based activation supported by Office 2013 is not possible in the subscription click-to-run version of Office. Sorry, I didn't get that.
Sorry. What, when you start streaming Office 2013, now, what would the first application that would start getting installed by default? You mentioned that if a client initiates an application like Outlook or so, the common components will immediately get preference and start downloading.
Yep.
But if not, if a streaming just happens, would it have a preference to from Word to Excel to Outlook?
So question was, if you're not interrupting the streaming, the initial streaming process, in which order the applications are streamed onto the client? It first streams the shared components of Office, which is nearly the half of the Office installation in size are the shared components, like proving tools, like the functionalities around picture manipulation. That's all shared components, so they are streamed down first. And then the next one is PowerPoint, I think. I'm not sure what the next applications are, but at the end, they are InfoPath and Publisher. These are the last ones getting streamed down onto the client. But the applications itself, again, are sliced into or cut into small slices. So it can really stream down the half of PowerPoint, then you start Word, and if you stop, stream down the slices needed to power on Word so you can start creating a text, and it starts to pick up streaming down PowerPoint, and then you're using a special functionality in Word, and then it will hop again off, get the slices needed for this functionality, and then hop back on and stream, continue to stream. Yeah, so your comment was that we should, or it's a good practice to inform the users what's happening during the streaming phase. You, of course, go ahead, inform your users. The streaming phase, as I said, is about an 8 to 10 minute streaming phase, and then installation is done. And also, if a user clicks onto a certain functionality and we are changing the streaming order, and the setup engine is detecting that it takes a certain amount of time. I think when it takes more than 1 second to react to the click of the user, it will generate a pop-up saying, we are streaming the feature you just requested. Please wait a minute. So if the user is on a small bandwidth connection, we will warn the user. It may take a while after you clicked before the functionality will be launched. So it's kind of built in to notify the user. Thanks. Yeah.
Sorry, if I missed the logging for the activation, so the logging for the installation, is that all in the same log?
The log for the activation is not in the same log like in the installation. These are two different logs.
Where is the log for the activation?
The question is where the log for the activation is. Let's go to this slide. It can be also in a temp folder if you enable the logging for application launch and initial activation, or it's not logged, but you can display it by using OSPP VBS. Then with OSPP VBS, it's not written into a log file. It's just displayed on a command line to you. The question was if you can see the issues with proxy activation or going over the proxy into the internet if activation fails. Yes, you can see it in this log.
Okay.